We'd like to welcome you to the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. I'm your host, Amber, and I'm here with co-host Austin, and we'd like to know, do you have a passion to make a greater global impact? Are you ready to embrace leading with heart and love? If so, join us on this journey to become heart leaders who change the world. Each episode brings heart-centered connection, building stronger relationships, communities, and businesses. Let's take a deeper dive into what it means to be heart leaders. The Heart Leader Podcast starts now. Hi, and welcome to the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. I am your host, Amber, and today I am joined by professional storyteller, Sean Derrick. Sean is so pivotal in the youth community around the globe. He is a speaker. He really gets youth motivated through mentorship and coaching. And when it comes to being a heart leader, this individual has it in the bag. I have known him for years, and it has been consistent from the day that I met him. His focus was on how he can improve the world through helping youth. And I am so grateful and so honored that he's willing to come onto our program and share his wisdom and his insights so that we can learn from him. So Sean, I love you. I'm going to start with that because I've been in awe for years at the way that you can step in and not only motivate our youth, but motivate people like me who are parents and have kids, and help us understand like there's more to connecting with kids than just telling them what to do.
Thank you so much for that grand introduction. I really hope I live up to that today on the podcast. I love you too. Thank you so much. Working with young people has changed my life. I should say changes my life every day. Every time I meet someone who is a young person, generationally, if I'm starting at my with my family, we were taught, young people should be seen, not heard, growing up. And so there was a huge disconnect with young people and adults. And so I just kind of started this to fasten the gap, realizing that we have a lot to learn from each other. And young people keep you young. And I realize if I spend any amount of time away from them, that I am I'm losing at some point because they're the creators and innovators of everything that that the problem solvers are the problem solvers of every question and every problem that we've caused, and they just get it. They get it without having to learn. It's like my father. We had Nintendo. You remember Nintendo, right? We played Mario Brothers. And I was trying to teach him how to play Mario Brothers. And he moved the joystick, is what we called it back then. He'd always do. Why can't he get this? Well, he wasn't born in that era in which he could just pick it up, right? And so the young people who are generation me, right? We're born with the iPads. You'll see like a two-year-old working with an iPad. You'll see a boomer going, how do I even do this? So they just have answers. They just get it, inherently, but they get it just by being born in this time. So I try to stay as close to the ground with young people as I can, helping them, yes, but it also improves the lives of those who are our age, quarter life crisis and up. And so it's probably the best investment that I can make.
That's amazing wisdom, though, because generally people who are my age or even in your age category, which is younger than my age, we come at it from, we have something to teach you. We have the wisdom. We have the years. And so how did you make that connection that no, it isn't pushing wisdom at these kids, it's creating a bridge between here's what I have to offer you. And here's what I would like to receive from you in return. So it's an exchange. It's not a one way.
I lost my father at 14. And you think that when you lose, he's like our patriarch, right? He was so respected. When you lose, I'm like, wow, I lost all my guidance. And then something really, really cool happened. And that was, I discovered probably at 14 at his funeral, my older brother went to the mic and he said that my father wasn't a rich man. And my father was a window washer, by the way. And he said, but if you look around, there's standing room only. And my father was the richest man because he invested in people. And two things I learned from that day. Number one, I was like, man, I want to be a speaker. That sounds great. And then two is after the funeral, I got so many questions from people in our family, people in our community. And I thought they were just being nice. But what I found, what I discovered is, you know, when you have children, they're going to solve the questions that you couldn't answer in your own lifetime. So things should get better every generation, right? We should be stronger. We should be smarter, more efficient. And so that's what young people are here to do. I knew that from a very young age. The time it takes a young person to figure out things is lightning speed compared to what time it takes us to figure out. And the reason being is because we're still trying to solve the problems that we had 10 years, 20 years ago. You know, that's why they say when you graduate with your major, that job has already been taken, right? And so we're behind. And the only way to get ahead is to hang around young people, right? The most innovative, influential, creative people on the planet. So I knew they were the answer. And also, I think that when I was younger, I thought, I knew when people were talking down to me. I don't know if you ever felt this, Amber, you know? Oh, yeah. Hey, how are you doing? I'm like, why is he talking like that? You know? And so, but I knew that. And I go, well, maybe they don't know that I know that. And so I talk to young people as people. I don't call them kids. I call them young people. I believe their voice matters. I was just in Ontario speaking at a conference. We play this game called Go There. And they get to choose between agree, strongly disagree. And they go. They split up. And one of the questions or statements I posed, young people have no business in politics. And then they get to choose where they go. And you should have heard some of these answers. You know, this generation are a lot more sensitive, right, to gender preferences, names. They're more sensitive to people who don't look like them, don't sound like them, and don't believe what they believe. And it's really hard to unlearn. It's easier to learn than it is to unlearn. And so being around young people is we're literally making the race better, the human race better every time a young person has an idea and we go with it. And so, you know, Javier, we come from a program called Youth to Youth. And the idea is that it's youth-led, adult-guided, is that if you can see a young person, you know, up on the stage and making decisions, and then we're just here to support them, then we can go a lot further. Wherever you are in your life, it doesn't mean that you're done dreaming or done living, but it is a reflection of all the decisions you made to get to that point. And so imagine how far you would be, how much further you would be, I should say, if you had adult support, right? I'm there to be a voice for them. My company, you know, we have a message, use your inside voices. The idea is that if you have something to say, we're going to get behind you and be the support system so that you have a chance, the chances that we didn't have when we were growing up.
To me, that's amazing. You know, I have a son who was consistently categorized and labeled because he wasn't what many would call on the normal spectrum. And it always had me wondering, what is a normal spectrum? And why do we as adults desire to categorize young people instead of allowing them to bring what they bring to the table, whatever that is? And so when you have someone like you who really is a voice for the youth and motivates them, coaches them, helps to inspire them so they don't feel like they're being placed in these categories, but they have their freedom of expression from wherever they are. I wonder what your view is on these categories that we tend to create in our societies. Are they helpful at any point? Are they more harmful than helpful? What's your view on that?
Before I take a stance, I think it's important to open up the idea of labels and categories for just a moment, right? So, you know, if you label a bin trash, what does everyone do to it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, they throw garbage in it, right? Just simply because it's labeled trash. Now it's a plastic bin. And so when I was younger, I did really horrible in school. So bad that the school that I went to, a lot of teachers started to give up on me, you know, and the principal comes to my mother and said, we don't have the resources to help out your son. They did this thing called a social move. A social move is where they move you on to the next grade. They excuse your entire academic performance for the year, even though you didn't pass any classes. And to their credit, they thought they were being helpful. But what happened with a lot of teachers is I was labeled now. This kid is not smart. He's disruptive. He's a class clown. And so just like that bin, right, I was labeled garbage of sorts. And so it's really hard for a bin to act like anything else but a trash can if it's filled with garbage. So, you know, I could go around and try and change everybody's mind and say, don't do this to these people, right? The reason why I start with young people is because I now have to empower that bin and say, hey, listen, you have to take the labels off. I know this is going to suck and it's going to hurt, but you got to take these labels off, right? Because it ain't what they call you, it's what you answer to. Right. And so it's not about you growing up and going on to do better things. It's not a matter of time. It's always a matter of mind. And so if I can start there and say, listen, categories and labels are made up by a person, by people. Right. Then you can make up your own. Right. And then you can say, this is not a place for garbage. Don't throw your garbage here. Right. My sister has got two children, right? Aiden and Adria. And growing up, we were taught that, you know, when you're playing, you know, because I'm the youngest of five, by the way, you're playing, right? And you come home and the girl comes up, oh my God, mommy, he hit me. And then your mom would say, oh, that just means he likes you. Whoa, that's wrong. So the first time I saw my nephew, you know, playing around, and he was two at the time, and I think she was four, and he hits her, right? And I'm like, okay. And I heard my sister say, oh, he's just playing. And look, I don't have any kids. I'm not trying to come for my sister when I say this, but I did know it was a very important moment to say, wait a minute, that's not what this means. Because now if she understands that they're just playing or the boy likes her, she can grow up and she can accept later on abuse. So if I can start here and say, hey, listen, dude, when someone tries to throw garbage at you, trash at you, you change your label and you say, this is not, you know, this ain't happening. Then later on, when there is a when there's a pay gap, right, if there's someone treating you less than what you're worth, or if you're in any abusive relationship, you know how to take that label off. And so that's why I start there. So that's why it's important to kind of understand categories and labels before I take a full stance on it. They're just made up, just like borders, just like our names, just like anything else. They're just made up. And knowing that, you can change that, right? But I think we get stuck in this, we're born in this, wow, we have so much tradition and we've done things this way. And I like the most dangerous language in our dangerous sentence in any language is because we've always done it this way. So with young people,
it's always been done. Why would we change it?
Why would we change it? And so young people are young enough that they've only been on this earth for a few years. They're impressionable. They're ready to change. They're still growing. Their brains are developing. And so if they know how to delabel themselves, then they have a better shot at being great leaders, leaders worth following, and having lives worth talking about.
Thank you for sharing that perspective, because I feel very similarly, especially watching how labels can crush someone's spirits if they take them on. And so they do need people in their lives who empower them to say, I'm not the label that you give me. I'm whatever I choose to be.
Absolutely.
That does have to come from those around them, lifting them up in a way too, because what I've found, and I'm certainly not the expert in the field, and that's why I'm grateful that you're here, but just from parenting, there's so much external pressure on these kids from everywhere, just everywhere, that if they don't have someone to lift them up from someplace, and I know when we got together and caught up a little bit, we were talking about even guidance counselors, right?
Yeah.
The people that are supposed to be leading children, they're not always spot on. And so where do they go? How do they find communities that will build them up and help them get a footing in a world that's attempting to tell them who to be and what to do? So what advice would you give these young people to even get a foothold to be able to change that label?
Well, two things I want to say. Thank you so much for this question, because now you're really digging into what I'm passionate about. We have this term that we're always using in today's society. It's haters. You've heard that before, right? I got haters. And, you know, and I used to say, let's give our haters a round of applause for the live performance. That was, you know, and I'd say something like, if someone's talking about you, all it means is that you're worth talking about, right? Trying to empower. And I sort of stopped that messaging. One of the reasons is we talk about our haters, we very rarely talk about our lovers. And I know why bad news travels fast. It's actually evolution. In our hindbrain, it helps you notice things that may not belong. For example, if something comes in, it looks like a snake, you should jump at it, right? So you don't get bit. That is now translated into, I'll ask young people, hey, how many of y'all, and I want you to raise your hand if it only applies to you, only if it applies to you, everyone agrees, cool. How many of y'all every single year watch the Oscars and a few hands go up? How many of y'all understand what just happened at the Oscars? Everyone's hand goes up. And I said, on count of three, say what happened. One, two, three. They all say, Will Smith smacked Chris. Now, is that the only thing that happened at the Oscars? No, of course not. No, but that kind of news travels fast. Brain is designed to pick up on things that don't belong. It's what usually keeps us safe. So it's really hard to tell a young person to just listen to positive, because it's evolution, really. It's the reptilian brain saying, look out for these dangers. So trust me when I say I have my work cut out for me. But the reason why I don't want young people to focus on hate, because when you become a hater, and that can happen after you've been bullied, you become one of those people, is I heard a quote once that said, hate does more to the container in which it is stored than it does to the container in which it is poured. So, you know, if you're harboring these emotions, right, or harnessing all this hate for someone, and you think you're going to, it's actually damaging you, right? And so my answer is always light. Just like you started this podcast off with, I love you, Sean. It's just light. It's to start off with light. It's to release. It's to forgive that person. It's to be a better person all the time. It's never about like, hey, let's get this money. Forget the haters. Like, whoa, how many lovers do you have in your house? How many lovers do you have in your circle? Let's focus on that. Because we understand that you're going to become hate, right? Right. Before you can hate on someone, you have to become it first, right? And the second thing I want to say is, you said, how do we do this? Well, it does take a community. I do a lot of work with the Department of Education on how to actively engage young people. We've done it in Ohio. I'm working with San Diego right now. We did Mississippi Department of Education. And one of the things we talk about, there's a really amazing educator, speaker. His name is Akko Kamban, and he lives in Columbus, Ohio. And he talks about this with the community and what the role should be. And when you think about teachers, right? If I take this glass of water, for example, since we're talking about it, and I pour this glass of water onto a desk, Amber, just tell me what might happen if I just pour it. Where does the water go?
All over the desk.
All over the desk, right? Now, if I take this water and I pour it into a cup, right, it'll always take the shape of the cup. Young people are liquid. And so even when I'm just being cool, right, I still add structure to the life, because they will always take the shape of whatever container it is poured into. And so when I go in some schools and I look at the young people, I can already tell what kind of community they come from. I see their shape, right? In some schools, when I leave, I know that my message, I know that after I give my message, right, they're in good hands, and sometimes they're not in good hands. I can tell. They're water. Young people are water. And we are too. You can tell what kind of environment someone, you know, lives in by the way they respond to you and approach you. And we're just liquid. And so when I talk to young, or when I talk to youth advisors, if I talk to educators, before I come in and speak, we have a consultation, right? I want to know what their plan after I leave is. And also I want to know what kind of programs are in place so that my message goes a lot further than the hour I am on stage, because that's the container. So nobody's going to change your life, you know, in an hour, right? That's just a piece of it. The idea is that, do they have a container that is positive, that can set goals for the future, but also be very conscious about the present, that allows breath work. And we're going to get in some of the other practices that we do, so that I know that they're in a grand container, one that's going to be beneficial to the future. So that's what the role of people who work with young people are, is to make sure they have the right environment. And then my idea is to activate, not fix. They're not broken. It's just to literally empower them, push the power button on in their lives. That's what I'm there to do.
And what a beautiful way to put it. Not broken. I mean, in my view, none of us are broken. We're just in motion. And
that's good.
That's a beautiful thing. We're always moving toward our next step. Mm. And that's the whole goal, right? We're always evolving. So the structure that you have, and if they go to shaundarrick.com, S-H-A-U-N, correct? They can see your entire program?
Yeah, S-H-A-U-N-D-E-R-I-K.com. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You have structured your program much like adult coaching programs, where you have speaker engagements, where you do motivational speaking. You also have workshops where the youth can get involved and actually navigate through workshops, hands-on workshops, and you have coaching and mentorship. So it's not like it's a once and done kind of thing. Like you're going to go and you're going to get them all, yes, I can do this. I can do this. Okay, now where do I go? Which, when I was young, we would have pep rallies. Motivational speakers would come in. I would hear about it. You know, don't do drugs. Live your life drug free. Right. Awesome. Right. How do I do that somebody is standing in front of me saying, hey, take this and you can hang with us?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
And yeah. Sorry about that. I was going to say,
that program, can you walk us through that program for kids so that, you know, if I'm a parent listening to this and I desire to understand more, I know what that's about.
Sure. Well, I remember growing up, I was born in the 80s. So around the late 80s, early 90s, we were in a program called DARE. And DARE was huge. They had t-shirts. We had to learn the song. In fact, you couldn't graduate right in fifth grade unless you learned DARE to keep the kids off drugs.
I still have my shirt, babe.
Okay, right. To keep the kids off dope, right? That was a word back then. the reason why, though, these projects were what I would really refer to as epic failures is because they were telling a lot of young people to turn away from drugs, but they weren't telling anybody what to turn to. I've been hired for a lot of drug-free conferences, and I literally have never, maybe once or twice, I don't do drug facts. I don't tell you what happens to your brain on drugs. I don't say it, how to control. I don't do that. You know what I talk about? Goals. That's it. Because if young people don't find something to live for, they start finding things to die for. So if I have something that I'm spending my time doing, right, that are a lot more important than drugs, I won't even be curious about it, right? And so I think that we have, yet again, we have amplified or edified the problem, right? And I do believe that what you focus on grows. And so I don't come in talking about drug-free messaging, right? If I'm a track star, the likelihood that I'm going to smoke is slim to none. So who do you want to do? Who do you want to be? Right. And if I can build from character outside, I don't have to even mention drugs. And so it's so funny if you at the end say, what was Sean's message about? He's like, follow your dreams, don't do drugs. I've never even said that. But I can teach you how to live a healthy lifestyle. And I don't have to mention, don't do this, don't do that. They understand that these are the healthiest decisions and most beneficial decisions for myself and my community, people around me. Me and Javier, we always talk about having both a mental and an emotional commitment to something. And the difference is a lot of people think, well, just tell them about drugs or tell them about, tell them about what happens and they can go to jail, or tell them about what happens when you don't get good grades. I'm like, well, that's a mental commitment. And if that was all it would take, all you have to do is read the labels on cigarette packets and you won't smoke. No, you have to have an emotional connection, an emotional commitment. And that's what it means. Commitment is to being emotionally and mentally bound to a cause. And so we get young people very emotional about their why. So if a young person says, hey, listen, I actually lost my mom. She had stage 4 lung cancer from smoking. Then the likelihood they'll pick that up is slim to none. They didn't have to read about that. They felt it. So two things. One is I talk about their goals quite a bit. And then two, I get them in touch with their why, their emotional commitment to why they're not using. And again, you have to give young people something to look towards, right? My partner, she tells the story all the time. I was raised Pentecostal, so I was always in church. And in her house, because I wasn't allowed to talk to girls on the phone, by the way, in high school. And I got embarrassed so many times, and it was trending before trending was a trend, that Sean is not allowed to talk to girls on the phone, right? Someone would call, right, pick up, and I'd try to talk, and my mom would go on the phone, Sean, do you want to tell her, or do you want me to tell her? And I'd be like, oh my God. Hey, Christy, I'm not allowed to talk to girls on the phone. And what? I'd get back to go to school, people were laughing. And then my partner says, she goes, what? Like boys, like what? What? I said, you didn't date in high school. What? No, I was too busy. I wasn't allowed. She was too busy. Priorities still. But the reason why I mentioned that is because she said, I start dating in college. She can't imagine the time that she even had to date when she was in school. She was in everything. She was lacrosse. She played classical piano. She was in ballet. She didn't have time for those things. And I'm only using that example to say that when you're working within your purpose, all the other things don't really matter, right? My mom used to say that an idle mind is the devil's playground. She was very religious. Devil's playground, idle mind. What she's saying is that when you don't have things to do, that's when the enemy supposedly is able to come in and entice you. We'll use that example is young people finding their purpose early on. Now, can that change? Of course it can change. But finding your purpose early on, the likelihood that you want to do things that aren't beneficial for you, again, slim to none. Slim to none. For me, it was piano. I got involved in music pretty early. And so I understood that I had to be practicing all the time and performing all the time. And so in order to be in the band or in order to be in this dance composition group, I had to be respectful of teachers, right? I had to be ready to go, right, at any point. And I just didn't have time for all the things that they're telling us to stay away from, right? And some young people have it easier than others, depending on what environment you're in, you know? If I ask you right now, Amber, I said, okay, I want you to number your paper 1 to 4. We know number it. I said, I want you to write print in the first line, script or cursive, right, in the second line, and then switch hands and write print and script. You'll tell me which was the hardest. You'll say, wow, 3 and 4. Some young people live their every day like 3 and 4, right? And if they break through, like Angela Duckworth, we call that grit. They break through, right? And some people don't have it that hard. Some people have 1s and 2s their entire lives. So again, like I said, my job is to give you something to live for so you won't even have the desire. The taste won't be in your mouth.
Do you find that for those who focus on the don'ts versus the do's, that the young people feel more trapped in that type of an environment and not empowered?
I think it's case by case. I try not to talk about my background too much because I know it doesn't matter. If I'm talking to educators, you know, and like when I was in Rio Grande, Texas, I was speaking at a school and I was asking, what's your biggest problem? I thought they were going to say bullying, right? That was like the hot button back then. Bullying. He said, theft. Theft. What do you mean? He said, well, a lot of parents don't have jobs, and so they steal extra school lunches. And then I realized it was a great percentage of this community didn't have running water. I mean, it freaked me out. There are cases like that, right? But people want to learn. People want to do better. And if you give them something to shoot for, the human spirit is unbelievable. You know, I lost both parents, all grandparents. And I talked to someone who's, you know, maybe losing a parent now, and I watched them shut down. And we have same situation. We just had different reactions to it. So the human spirit is unbelievable. It can do anything. It's still fragile. We watch people snap all the time. I believe what happened at the Oscars was a person snapping. We see it all the time. We're very fragile. But I think what happened, there was like a level playing field when pandemic happened, right? So everyone's at home, they're in quarantine. And there were a lot of young people who didn't have access to computers, so they couldn't actually go to school, right? We tend to think of the internet being everywhere, but even in this country, there are a lot of young people who could not access the internet. But it did level the playing field in this regard. Everyone had to be at home with themselves, right? And in close counters and quarters with everybody for the first time, right? Really sit with themselves. And so for the first time in maybe 10 years, I had to change my message completely. And that is, I need to help people reframe where they are. Because I traveled, I've seen people who, again, not have running water or could not wait to get to school because they knew it was such a privilege because their parents couldn't have gone. And so I said, Sean, you need to fix this quickly. Always focus on solution, right? And so a lot of people were focusing on like, okay, what post-pandemic bliss? And I'm like, no, we're here now, let's celebrate it. And so I made a whole presentation and program that really outlined all the good of being in quarantine. And I started to get hired because what I said, instead of saying, you know, for example, I have to, you know, take out the trash, or I have to be with my parents, or I have to do the dishes. I saw having young people start to change that to, I get to. And I'll never forget this one young person. I said, we're on Zoom, by the way, so you can see the chat box. And I said, all right, everyone, time to transform. All right, we're going to reframe. All right, I want you to put change something that you don't like to do, right? Dishes. I have to do the dishes. Change it to I get to do the dishes. He writes, I get to do the dishes. I'm like, how does that feel? Like clockwork, he goes, still sucks.
For now.
I was excited because I knew I had something. I said, well, hold on. Let's call him Timothy. I don't know. So hold on, Timothy. I said, Nora, for you to say, I get to do dishes means that at some point you got to say, I got to eat. So, you know, reframing happened during the pandemic with my company and a lot of speakers that I work with, showing what is something that, right, that you can do now that you could not do. I mean, I want you to make a list. When you first start this out, it's like making a grateful list. It's kind of silly. You feel, you're like, I'm grateful for my roof over my head. So kind of start with like, I mean, I don't know, I get to hang out with my people, my family, and hang out with my dog. And then they go a little deeper. Oh, I guess the time, but I can sleep in a little bit, right? And then like, I can play video games. And then they're like, wait a minute. All the time that I've asked for, because everyone's been asking for that thing that cannot be duplicated, which is more time. And then finally, everyone got more time. So everyone who's been saying, man, I wish I could write a book, I could record an album, I can write lyrics to a song or a poem, I can work on my body, I can run more, exercise more, I get closer to my family, right? Here you have a great opportunity. One of my favorite lines from a movie, and it's a movie called Evan Almighty. You got Morgan Freeman plays God, and it's sort of like the sequel to Bruce Almighty with Jim Carrey. This time, you know, Evan Almighty is playing Noah, the second Noah, if you will. Third, if you count the second Noah as a show. Okay. And Morgan Freeman's character, right, is talking to Evan's wife. And Evan's wife does not know that this busboy is God. And she's telling Morgan Freeman's character all the frustrating things happening in her family. And she looks at him and says, what does that sound like to you? And he says, it sounds like an opportunity. She looks at him like, what? And then Morgan Freeman's character looks her dead in the eye and said, you know, when people pray for patience, do you think that God gives them patience, or does he give you the opportunity to be patient? When you pray for courage, does he give you courage, or does he give you the opportunity to be courageous? When you ask for your family to be closer together, do you think that he just, you know, zaps you with warm, fuzzy feelings, or does it give you the opportunity for you to love and care for each other? Everyone got in touch with themselves in a way they'd never had before. And how can you appreciate things that you don't notice? So when I was doing life coaching, I would have something called an UB journal, an unexpected blessings journal. And the reason why I would have people start with an unexpected blessing journal is because I wanted to see if they could at least notice great things happening in their lives. And I say, listen, every day, we'll meet up once a week for a month, but every day you've got to write in your UB, and then they have to see. And of course, it started like, yeah, I noticed strangely that, you know, my neighbor said hi. She doesn't usually do that. That was an unexpected blessing. Then it comes bigger. I got a parking space, right? This is Santa Monica, LA. I've never had that. And then you realize that more things are happening in your favor than not. And that you, just like negative influences, just like bad news travels faster than good, you've been sort of programmed of sorts just by DNA to notice all the bad things, right? All the negative things to fix, right? And they realize, oh my goodness, like every day, things are happening that I've never noticed before. I said, well, if you never noticed them before, it's almost like they're not happening, isn't it? So now, The whole world got a break. We got a chance to sit still and realize all the things we have, right? And how important your health is and your mental health. That became even more a hot button. And now we get to re-enter the workspace with poise and respect and gratitude in a way that we hadn't before. Because if you take someone who lives in, you know, Cape Town, or who lives in Johannesburg, right? And you bring them here and you set them in a school in Jersey and you watch this kid perform, he'll perform like his life depended on it, because it does. But here, in one of those richest countries in the world, rich in things, you know, it's hard to see appreciation. I'm sorry, it's hard to see the things that are working out for us. It's hard to be appreciative until it's taken away. Ask the first thing, what's the first thing you're going to do when we get our freedom back, right? And everyone's like, oh, I'm going to go to the mall. I have friends. I'm just going to go breathe on strangers. And now that's what appreciation is. There's a man, his name is Sadhguru. Let me know if I'm talking too much. You've got me on a, I'm like,
no, not at all. I agree, says, though. I mean, we just get to a point where we get what we ask for, and then
yeah.
We regret that we asked for it, or we don't even realize that this is what we asked for.
Oh, absolutely. This is why it's important to journal, though, too, because you can look back in time and go, oh, I got exactly what I asked for, of course. Mm-hmm. The question is, how are you going to feel when you get that? Yeah. And really focus on that. So my team meetings, and I had one before this call, I had it a couple hours ago. I always start out with something called one word. And this concept has traveled. It's helped CFS, which is Course from Scratch, and some other companies I've worked with. I say, one word, how are you feeling? And I check in with them. They'll say, ecstatic, or lethargic, or whatever it is, just to see if they can feel their emotion right then. Because if you can feel where you are now, right, you can change it because you can locate it. So instead of saying, you know, I don't work with goals the same way as other people do, right? I don't say, what do you want to accomplish, right? I say, how do you want to feel when you accomplish that, right? And they might say, I want to feel fulfilled, or I want to feel joyful, or I want to feel playful. And I say, okay, can we feel playful until we get to the goal? And then it's like
that's
them experiencing
amazing,
it in
because
real time.
It moves it from being all about thought to invoking your heart. And passion is, as you said, it's what drives us forward. It's what connects us with the goal in the first place.
It's absolutely, it's that, but see, it's also falling in love with the journey. As generic as that might sound, the reason why I say that is because anyone who has accomplished any difficult task, right? Like, I don't know, climbing a mountain. The time you spend on the mountaintop is so inferior to the time, right? It takes to go up and down. It's so small, right? So enjoying the journey is super important, because whenever you hit that goal, that feeling doesn't last. You're on to the next. Our success in this country in a polychromic capitalist society is a moving target. So what if I enjoy it on the way up? Then how much more fulfilled will I feel? You know, that's why I focus on the feeling of a goal as opposed to just the accomplishment of it. One client, you know, I would have her write these narratives. And by the way, one of the things I do is I write grand narratives for companies, right? For branding. And I'll explain to it what a grand narrative is. And I have 20 seconds left, less. If I was writing a grand narrative for, say, Starbucks, I would say something like, you know, wherever you see our brick and mortar, anywhere in the world, you feel a little closer to your neighborhood. Or from the time you enter to the time you leave, you'll feel like you belong. And see, the grand narrative is going to inform your, you know, procedures and your practices. So that's
by the
why
way,
you might
Starbucks,
see that,
if you take that, you have to reach out to Sean.
But you know, you have to write their name on, because that makes them feel like they belong, right? Or you have like these holiday warm colors that makes you feel like you're closer to home or whatever. And so that's what that is, a grand narrative. It's going to help you the practice procedures, helps you with your vision statement, your promise statement, just in one sentence or two sentences. I do this for companies. And for people personally, when I'm trying to help them by having a UB journal, your unexpected blessings journal, you know, and I'll say, what is your intention for today? And one client was doing very well. I'll tell you about her a little later. And she says, I'm going to see if I can get time to spend. It was just so broken. And I said, hold on, listen, let's go back. What did you just say? And they're like, no, I'm going to maximize the time I have, no matter what the length is. All right, let's go on to the next one. I'm going to try not to get upset because I said, oh, your intention is everything. And you're starting out as at a deficit. What if we start out as a surplus? What might that sound like? I'm going to find joy in the most unlikely places. Then it becomes fun. What's the difference between a puzzle and a problem? One's fun. That's the difference. I got a workbook I call a playbook, because it's not only it's a strategy book for achieving some of the goals that you have, but it's also fun while you do it, right? The saddest moments in my childhood weren't what you think they are. It wasn't when, you know, someone's pet passed away, or it wasn't when I got lost at a theme park. It was when my mom or dad said, it's time to leave the park. Young people are never, ever ready to stop having fun. Why did we? So there's ways that you can solve a lot of your problems by making them puzzles. When I talk to my team and I say, hey, listen, we need to make this number, they know why we need to solve this puzzle. They know where we know all the outlets and all the funnels that we have to support people, and why we are, our why is huge. And so guys, whoever can solve this puzzle, I will incentivize it this way. I never go, all right, y'all, we lost this gig, we lost that gig, we're supposed to be doing this TV show. No, that's not fun. That isn't fun. Imagine you're in a simulation.
They also forgot to celebrate, not only have fun, but celebrate our successes. And again, Absolutely. Going back, I don't care what age you are. When you do get to the top of that mountain, there's a part of you that you want to be like, yes, I did that. And sometimes we're so busy moving on to the next thing that we forget to even celebrate the successes. And when I've watched some of your stuff that you've done, like there's a whole lot of you that's, you're very calm and you're very focused, but you have this energetic, fun part of you that's all about celebrating the present moment too. And I feel like that's something that really just needs to be present in all of our lives. I don't care if you're 5 or 105, we should be celebrating every goal, every moment. And so what's your feel on that?
I feel like you are going in my brain and like, he's going to say this next. It's freaky. I agree 100%. I incentivize everything, whether I'm getting my body in order or I'm wanting my team to perform at a higher level. Celebration is 100%. Edification, like edifying someone, acknowledging them goes a long way. Whatever your love language is, it goes a long way. But you choose, my friend Danielle Leslie, who owns a company called CFS, and they just hit 20 million. She started her company from the ground up. She had gotten fired from her tech job, her startup job, and she had this idea for a company in which I brought her on my show, The Hard Part Show, years ago. And I called her out, call out season. And I said, why aren't you doing this thing? Well, years later, she's been in Forbes. She's been all over. But I got this concept from her. And she says, she has two things. One thing is, she says, is you get to choose when to celebrate. You get to choose when. You don't have to, all right, next Friday we're doing. No. You can literally have a dance party in the middle of the day with just you. Be surprised. There's a few things that can release endorphins and raise your energy. One is taking a cold shower if you want to go that direction. All right. The other thing is accomplishing very small things like making up your bed, or for me, learning a song that I didn't know before. Right. Those are little moments of celebration for me. I don't mean just partying. I don't mean jumping up and down. I mean, I incentivize my day all throughout. I just told my partner, I said, I feel so much better than I did this morning. And I forgot in between then. I just learned this song and I was so excited about it. I mean, no, I'm not going to perform it for anyone. I just learned this song that I was listening to it on Spotify on the way in an Uber. And I was like, I'm going to learn that when I get home. And in 15 minutes, I had the whole song and I was so proud of myself. And so I find ways to celebrate every day. The second thing she said, and I don't know if you're even going to this because I feel like you're a mind reader. This is really strange. I've had the hardest time accomplishing, or I should say, finishing projects. If I had kryptonite, it'd be that. And so what I discovered during pandemia is I had the worst case of imposter syndrome. Is that if you are listening and you've accomplished things of great significance, perhaps you probably didn't think that you could do it. That's what I felt. And so when you do things that you don't think you can do, you think that because you've accomplished those things, you'll do greater things. And I argue against that. When you do things you didn't think you could do, yes, it builds your confidence, but it also puts you in the category of an imposter. Because remember, you didn't think you could do it. And so for the longest time, I had done so much better than a lot of members of my family. I had beat the odds. My counselor told me, this is how much you'll make if you have an associate's. This is how much you make in a bachelor's, a doctorate, right? I hit the without having a doctorate, I hit that the first 2 years, that was like, okay, they were wrong. So I hit all these, like then this crippling imposter syndrome came. And here we are in pandemic, and a lot of speakers were quitting. And then my friend Danielle Leslie said, well, why don't you launch this idea that you've been talking about? This is online school. I said, it really hit me because I'd been doing something for years I knew how to do, which was speak. Now I got to go virtual. Now I got to, you know, make a curriculum. I got to do all these other things that I hadn't really done before. And she told me, she said, let me tell you something, how I built my company. She said, I understand something. I said, done is better than perfect. Done is better than perfect. And sometimes becoming a perfectionist is just a way to procrastinate, to say, I'm not really worthy. Now, for those who are out there listening, please hone your skills. Please work on your projects. Like, you know, earn it. But Danielle Leslie, my friend Alicia Nash, is a brilliant mind as well. She would go to these film festivals and she'd go, wow, they put this in the festival. And then after judging this film, she goes, wait a minute. What am I doing? I haven't even finished my film. So you don't have to be amazing. You just have to be done.
Yeah, you learn so much just by getting good enough out there.
Yes.
Like, of course, absolutely. Don't just throw crap out there. But again, mm-hmm. It goes back to, what are we teaching our kids?
Yeah.
If we feel like everything has to be perfect before we'll even take a step forward.
Yes. That's, and it doesn't, it's, first of all, perfection is, it's its own cancer, by the way, because it eats away at you, right? And there's just shelf life for certain ideas. And if you're listening, I'm sure you've had an idea, or your friends or someone in your family, someone you grew up with, had an idea, and they'll tell you about it, because this is the story they'll never let down, right? Or they'll never let go of. And it's this, man, I had that idea. Yeah. Yeah. You're not special in this regard. You're not special when you have an idea to solve a problem. Well, we live in a society where we can also notice that you might say, man, I wish someone would have that, you know, create or invent something to solve that problem. Well, someone's going to think of that as well. You're not special in that regard. The person who gets the credit is the person who goes after it, who does it, right? Who completes it. And it doesn't have to be perfect. Oh, Amber, you know this, coming from film as a producer and a writer, putting it out there, you know, you'd be surprised. The videos that have gone viral, I'm like, y'all like that one?
Yeah.
Wow, I was spending, you know, weeks on this video I thought would go viral, and it got 4,000. And then I spent, you know, 2 seconds shooting this, and that got 4 million. You know, you don't know what's going to pop. So ideas, just put it out there, you know.
But I think that kind of goes back to even our theme for the month, which is transparency. Sometimes it's like, okay, I'm putting this out there and I'm going to be fully transparent. It's not perfect. But the perfection is that it's not perfect. And I'm not perfect. And I'm okay with not being perfect. And I will give props to our editor, Daniel, on this podcast. He's the one who consistently comes back and says, okay, yeah, there's a mistake right here, but please don't have us cut that out, because that's what makes you authentic and seem real. And absolutely. I love our group for that, because we come together and we're always looking at, okay, no, we're not going to be perfect, but whoever is, as you said, let's just be transparent when we're not, and let's own it.
Absolutely. One thing I want to, that's a great point. And if you're out there and you've got a project you've been holding off on, just throw it out there, you know, please get it done, throw it out there, and do it. Do it without sharing your ideas with people. I would always tell people, be careful who you share your dreams with, right? Just because some people aren't good parents. They don't know how to hold it, right? And the reason why I say that is because when your dreams are so fragile before you get a project done, people can kill it in its infancy, right? And the reason why is because I use the idea that planes and helicopters aren't designed to hit anything. That's it. And so, you know, it's super important that when you're telling a dream to people who don't understand it, you're literally, you know, walking through, a field of landmines, or you're going through, you know, debris, right? because it's not ready to be shared. And remember, your helicopter isn't designed to hit things. But finishing a project and getting out there once it's, you know, that you got it done, right? Then it's designed to, it can fly, right? You're a lot more confident when you have it done than you have it as an idea, right? And I like to say that there are idea people and then there are I did it people. And you can guess what you have to do to become the latter. So whoever's listening, dude, like, you know, jump on it, man. Jump on it.
Love it. Great parting wisdom. Okay, so for folks who want to get a hold of you, let's give them a way to get a hold of you one more time.
Absolutely. You can go to shaunderick.com. That's shaunderick.com. I'd love to work with you. I'm also doing some really interesting humor on IG. It's at shaunderick. Or at shaunderick, shaunderick. If you want to laugh, come check me out.
Awesome. We'll be sure to include all of that with this podcast too, so that all they have to do is go with a simple click and they can get right over to you. And you have some different speaking engagements and things like that coming up too. And all that's on your website, right?
Absolutely. I'll be able to share. We're updating it as we speak.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us and giving us insight into what you do. And for those of us who do work with youth, how we can even be more effective at it. Really, really appreciate you for that.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate you.
And thanks to all of you for joining us on another episode of the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. Just a quick reminder, we do have a lot of amazing tools and tips that you can get for free in our Heart Leader Toolbox. All you have to do is go over to suivera.org and you can register completely and totally free to get access to all of these amazing resources. Until next time, I look forward to seeing you in the Suivera community. You've been listening to the Heart Leader Podcast with your host, Amber, where heart and mind align. Tune in weekly on transformationtalkradio.com as we take a deeper dive into what it means to be a heart leader. Ready to take the next step? Join us and over 1 million people worldwide who've united in creating this global movement of love. Become a heart leader for today and tomorrow. Learn more and connect with us at suivera.org.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.